Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hey everyone, Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Great to have your company. And today we are talking about a topic that I think every single practice owner really needs to be on top of. In fact, they need to understand this stuff upside down and inside out. And that topic is the compliance piece of HR. We know that when HR goes well, the team is fantastic, things get done, it feels terrific. But when things don't go well and issues arise, we know that those issues can be very emotionally draining, they can be time consuming, and in the worst case, they can even be very costly from a financial point of view. So my guest today is Sally Murphy from Purple Playground. Now, Sally is an expert in HR. She's worked her whole professional life in this sphere, large companies, and now she works with small to medium enterprises, including lots of dental practices. And in fact, she's helped me a lot as well get our HR compliant. And we're going to talk about the things that trip up a lot of practice owners. We're going to try and understand what the biggest problems are that practice owners face, whether it's overwhelming and not quite sure what to do and how to do it. And what about our record keeping obligations? What do we need to have in terms of, you know, policies and procedures, and how do we store those? And of course, we want to make sure that we get all this right, because when it does go wrong, as I said a moment ago, it really does create enormous heartache for the business owner. I'm going to encourage you to take notes as we go through this podcast. There's lots of strategies and tactics that Sally shares that you're going to want to check in on, particularly around paying your people right. And most of us assume that everything's right, but when you look into things, there's lots of areas where you may not be quite spot on. So we want to make sure we get that right. So I'm going to encourage you to also take Sally up on her HR health check, because this is where you're going to know whether you are on the right side of the compliance line or not. And you just want to get this done right, because it's like insurance. You want to never have to call on it, but also know that you're protected should the worst situation occur. Here's Sally Murphy from Purple Playground. Sally Murphy, thank you so much for joining us from the Gold Coast. Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Great to have you.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jesse.
We've been doing a lot of work together over the years. You've helped me in HR and recruitment and lots of things. And I thought it would be really good to have you on the show to talk about some of the things that you've seen in HR and recruitment as well. But before we get into the tin tacks and the nuts and bolts of what we're talking about, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your background, because I don't know that I've ever really asked you how you found your way into this line of work. I've always just utilized your services as is. But what's the background? How did you find your way into HR?
Yeah, look, I've got a big history in hospitality. I'm just a sucker for traveling, and I loved it from a young age. And when I started first, working in the real world after leaving school, it was really around in hospitality, in food and beverage, in front office and those sorts of jobs. And then I kind of went, God, I love this atmosphere still. It's a really vibrant atmosphere, but what's with the weekend work? So what role has, who here just started looking around and observing, who here has, the 9 to 5, careful what you wish for. And so I went, oh, those HR people look pretty cool. They get to do some fun stuff. And so I went to study and got my degree, and whilst I was sort of still working in hospitality, but I kept putting my hand up, can I help out here, can I do this? And that led actually to the majority of my HR career in hospitality and in big hotel chains and moving into their corporate world as well. And so that's, I've been very privileged to travel and to work in hospitality in the HR area, and I really loved the ability to go and open up brand new hotels. You know, you meet so many new people, you're creating roles, it's such a great atmosphere. So, then that led me to the point where I sort of got, the higher you got up, the more you could see, the more doors that would open. And let's just say, being politically correct, because look, we all have to be in HR at many times, but we are human. I saw too many things, and I guess sometimes my ethics and values were compromised one too many times. It's something that's really plays strong for me is making sure that I live up to my own values. And so I started going, okay, well, how do I still take what I know and what I love, but who can I help that actually will not just be a tick in the box exercise? And so I started this company, Purple Playground, about 5 years ago now, and we help all sorts of organizations and practices in the SME world with their HR needs, and it met some amazing people. So that's what's led me here.
I guess that leads me into a pretty nifty little segue, in the sense that I'm sure you have seen the dark side of things. You have seen some things go obviously very, very well, you know, setting up things, getting people established in their roles, great, and all the rest of it. But equally, having worked with lots of small businesses now, it is an area of business that, you know, oftentimes the business owner, they know that they need to do it. They probably don't want to have to do it. And of course, they've never learned how to do it because, you know, in dentistry at least, I don't know about other degrees, you know, you go to dental school, you learn all the ins and outs of being a clinical dentist. You learn precisely zero about business and even less than zero about managing people. And so I wanted to ask you about some of the common pitfalls, because I'm sure you've seen a few boo-boos, a few mess-ups, a few, you know, things go a little bit of awry. So why is it so important that, you know, all small business owners need to kind of get their head around this stuff?
Yeah, good point. I feel like people really get into being a practice owner for one of two reasons, or even a business owner in any discipline really, is because they're passionate about what they do and what they love, or they're jumping from another area and they want to start something new, and that sort of area. But one thing I find on repeat that when I talk to business leaders, business owners, practice owners and founders, is that they never banked on having to be around people and lead the people, right? The people side of thing. You said the business side of thing, that's one thing, but they never really banked on, oh my gosh, I can't do this and I can't be as passionate about this if I have to do this without people, because people are our brand. You know, they're the face of our practices, our organizations. And unless you want to be on the tools and be on the business and then work in the business and have that constant juggle by yourself, which no one can really do well, even in that day and age of, you know, trying to multitask, then you can't do it all. So you need to have great people around you. And so it's that necessary, I need to do this, I need to have a great team around me. So I feel like, yeah, that's kind of where they can come undone, where they then go into the, I need someone, and it becomes very reactive. I know I need to do all the things, I know I need to have all these things in place, but I just don't have time. So they look for quick fixes. And even if that's like a quick hire or a quick document or policy or something like that, and then it just becomes that, you know, plug and play and try and set and forget, but it will never serve you well. And I've seen that happen many times with wrong people in the wrong roles at the wrong time, wrong documents, policies, contracts, all those sorts of things, just because they're not fit for purpose and they have just been that reactive, I just need to put something in place.
You spoke about, unless you want to be the person that's in the business, on the business all day, every day, 24/7. And of course, we know that's not possible. So you're quite right that if we are going to have any kind of business, whether it's a large one or a small one, we need to be able to bring the best out in people. We need to be able to work effectively with people, whether we're still staying small as an operation or indeed scaling up. We need to be able to work with and through other people. So those skills around finding the right people, managing people well, having the right structures in place so that they can succeed in their roles, but also working on our own leadership skills as well to bring the best out of them, are going to be really, really critical. You spoke about overwhelm and shortcuts and all the rest of it. And I know many, many practices are always looking for the template, give me the boilerplate contract, the boilerplate policy, this, that, the other. Is that a common thing that you see where people go, I just want a document, it's going to sit on the shelves, I'm not going to look at it, I'm not going to think about it, but I've ticked the compliance box technically because I have a document, but as you say, it may not be fit for purpose. Is that a commonplace situation?
Yeah, spot on, Jesse, because people do. It's human nature just to go, you know, it doesn't mean that the quick way is always the wrong way.
No.
But when it comes to compliance, and this is, yeah, the boring side of HR, I get it, or the boring side of running a practice, but it's the necessary side. And think of it like an insurance policy. I feel like if you've got, just this insurance policy for your business in case something happens, but if you've got is one thing, but you won't ever know if it's good or bad until you need it. And it's the same with your policies, the same with your employment contracts. If you just grab something you've had previously and you think it's just going to work, and you, as you said, you can stick it on the shelf, look, hopefully, fingers crossed, you'll never know otherwise because you won't ever need to call on it. In the eyes of Fair Work, they always look for, it's the employer's responsibility to do all of these things, not the little employee. They're there to defend the little employee and help them succeed, which is a great thing, but they think of employers as big enough, old enough, ugly enough, financially geared up enough to be able to get the right support and expertise. And so if you've just got that policy you think is going to help, solve a problem, tick a box on the compliance sheet and then put it on the shelf or stick it into your hard drive, then don't do anything with it. then that won't stand up should you ever need to actually call upon it. It'll be full of holes. And, yeah, unfortunately, most people learn the hard way that there is something called Fair Work. And if the Fair Work Ombudsman comes knocking, whether it's to do with pay, policies, a complaint, a grievance, any of those sorts of things, then that's when you'll be really called upon that did you cross your T's and dot your I's.
Many years ago, before Fair Work was called Fair Work, I had that knock on the door and it was quite distressing and stressful. And it turned out we were okay. We'd done all the right stuff, but a grievance had been raised and we needed to deal with that and all the rest of it. And so I can tell you, for the audience listening, it's not the knock you want to get. And having been through that and, yes, coming out of that unscathed, I'm aware that not everyone was fortunate enough to have that experience. So I want to ask you, what are the things that brings the ombudsman knocking generally? What are the things that have people either raise a grievance or seek advice from Fair Work? What are the typical things that an employee might ask Fair Work for help with?
Yeah, so the common ones, unfortunately, there's quite a few. There could be that someone didn't have the right to work in Australia. It could be that someone's not getting paid correctly, which is a really big one, which most employers say to me, and I could put this on repeat because I hear it all the time, is, oh, no, we pay above what we should, so we're fine. And then when we look into it and do a wage review, a salary review, scoping, all of those things, we find a lot of things that aren't right. And it's not necessarily, when we say fault, it's not necessarily an intent, the impact versus intent. So it doesn't mean you've intended to underpay or do anything like that. And I think that's 99.9% of the time. There's very rarely that intent to do the wrong thing. But the impact that it can have on yourself, on the individual, and on, the whole process going through the Fair Work Ombudsman process, can be quite derailing and consequences, whether you're talking money, time, those sorts of things. Never ends well. So it's the pay, it's the, as I said, the working rights. It could also be sexual harassment claims, bullying claims. It could just be something, what we call a grievance, where something is interpreted differently by one particular person in the organisation, even though the other person didn't intend that to be the way it was construed. But then they can go straight to Fair Work and lodge a complaint. And there's been a lot of legislation changed over the last couple of years that allows them to, employees, to go directly to the Fair Work Ombudsman to make a complaint. They always could, so don't get me wrong, but now Fair Work will have got more rights to act on it straight away as opposed to passing it back to the employer to try and resolve themselves first. So they're kind of the main things, is around that those policies, sexual harassment, bullying, and underpayment are the big ones.
So just to focus on underpayment for a second, because I think that there's something in that, because you see the news stories where maybe a large multinational has underpaid their workers, and the inference is that this large multinational corporation is greedy. They're trying to pick on their workers, and what I've picked up from what you've said is, A, it's probably not intentional, even with a multinational, is probably some administrative oversight somewhere that's led to this. So I guess if we want to make sure that we are really on top of paying our people correctly, and I know everyone listening to this would want to do that, the intent would always be there to do the right thing. What are some of the things that a practice owner should think about or investigate to make sure they are paying adequately and appropriately?
Yeah, so I agree with you that majority, as I said, 99.9 or 100% of people won't purposely underpay someone. So some of the things that you can do to try and mitigate that risk is to understand the awards that you're on, that your people are on, understand what level within each award they've got levels, they've got pay scales, they've got different grades, they've got different classifications. They've got, some of them have different, depending on how many years experience someone has as perhaps a dental hygienist, and, as to not just that they've got a qualification, but how much experience they're bringing to this role and what their expectations are. It's having a look at their position description. A lot of people say, well, this is the set role, this is what we've advertised as, and this is the position description, or we just use the job ad for the task list, But if they're being asked to do things that are over and above their job, then they, as I said, everything's good till it's all good, till they're out at a barbecue chatting to their friend who's also in the same industry and says, well, no, I do those extra things, but I get paid this. Oh, is that just a better employer that look after you? No, but they do look after me, but that's actually the minimum. Oh, really? Oh, well, I'm going to ask about that. And then if you don't know, have the answers, or they don't come to you first, which depends on your culture there, whether they'll normally come to you first, they can go straight to Fair Work and start asking the questions, and that's when they'll come knocking. So, yeah, it can be that.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to be mindful of. As you said, there's the award. There's the classification, there's levels, there's skills, there's experience, there's the role itself. So it is a bit of a, you know, it's a fair bit to be across. And so, ladies and gents, if you are thinking about the pay scales of your people, please just go through that list that Sally went through and just check all that out, because you want to be on the right side of the compliance line and doing all the best things, which I know, as I said, and Sally said, everyone wants to be, most of us think we are, but we want to know that we are.
Yes.
And that's the key. You mentioned policies a little while ago in that conversation where things can derail as well, Sally. And I'm curious to ask, I mean, obviously policies are very useful. We kind of get that part, but why is that such a big thing that might, you know, raise its head at Fair Work? Where do the policies come unstuck there? What sort of things might we need to do to mitigate that?
Yeah, good question, because I think, first of all, we need to understand what are some of the main, what we call compliance policies or HR policies that we need to have in place. And I sort of touched on them before, but they are some of those areas like anti-bullying, harassment, sexual harassment, which can be the one and the same or combined now, depending on where you live in Australia. There's equal opportunity, equal employment opportunity for all policies. There's what we call the code of conduct. For me, all of these encompass, in my layman's terms, is what are the rules of the game? So when you, whether you're looking at a brand new employee, whether you've got existing staff, what you need to do, it's about having the right policies in place, that they're fit for purpose, that they are bespoke for your particular practice. But then they're not just this once in a time point, and sorry, one point in time where the employee looks at the policy, is told to read it. I say if they want to get a good night's sleep, they'll or fall asleep, they'll read the policies. But you need to issue them. You need to make sure they're fit for purpose, and you need to make sure that they're readily available for your employees and do training on them. Now, it does sound like, wow, that's overkill. I need to train on policies. Aren't I employing adults? Don't I inspect them to be able to read, interpret, and sign off, and then, you know, stick them into the hard drive or in the policy folder in the practice? But in the eyes of Fair Work, it's not enough just to have policies, ask someone to sign them when they start, or if they're an existing employee, and then file them away forever. You actually need to train once a year. And whilst it does sound once again, oh my gosh, this is just something else, a weight on my shoulders that I need to do, it doesn't need to be painful. It doesn't need to be lengthy. It's about going over those policies and just making sure people do understand them. Grab your people together, put on a morning tea, go through them, any questions, get them to refresh, sign them, make sure they're version controlled. One of the other areas where practice owners and business owners come undone is where they don't follow their own policy, Jesse, which sounds really silly. So an example would be that if there is a case of, hey, you know, someone has said they're being bullied or sexually harassed, or, and of course, HR have seen it also, I go to the worst case scenarios. But if they report it, if they go to, say, the practice manager, and the practice manager doesn't escalate it, or it's too hard, basket, I don't know what to do, because this is quite common, because, you know, I've got a day job and I'm busy and I don't do anything with it. But the policy might say that you actually, well, I will say, you actually need to be confidential, you need to escalate it, you need to do X, Y, and Z. Now, if you don't follow it, even if that practice manager isn't the practice owner, they're actually representing any kind of leadership role. They're representing the employer. They're an employee on one side, but they're also the employer on the other side. So that's a gap where I see a lot of leaders and practice managers and business owners fall down, because they haven't followed their own process. And Fair Work can pull you up on that. And then regardless of where the particular scenario ends, whether it's deemed it was a sexual harassment case or it wasn't, they can pull you up on not following your own processes and find loopholes, and then you become liable to penalties and things like that.
So as the business owner, we obviously need to follow our own processes and policies, but what I'm hearing out of that is almost like vicarious liability as a result of the practice manager not following those processes as well. I'm imagining, as people driving to work listening to this going ding 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 ding, people are just like having a few little alarm bells going off in their brain as they hear that, because that then means we need to make sure our practice managers understand that responsibility too, because they're probably not even aware of that, and I'm sure practice owners aren't aware of it either. But the practice managers, like everyone else, they're doing the best they can in a busy workplace. They're probably, you know, trying to deal with the issue and the complaint on the fly because it's landed in their lap. And then rather than saying, hey, Mary, Bob, Susie, whoever it happens to be, you know, let me just consult the policy, they're probably diving into that conversation up front. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I guess that's where it all starts to derail. So I guess maybe is there a space for pausing, breathing, getting the policy out, running their eye over that before they react in that circumstance?
Absolutely. And that's key because you're not supposed to know everything. You know, everyone's busy, but I think the key there to remember is that anyone in any kind of leadership role, whether you lead one person or whether you are the practice owner, and, you know, you lead 5, 10, 50, it's irrelevant, but you need to know what your obligations are and your duty of care as an employee, yeah, but as a leader and representing the employer, because that's when, yeah, see those loopholes, that's where we can fall down and, yeah, things can escalate beyond where you want it to go.
It seems to me that where there's conflict in a workplace, it's often because there was a lack of clarity about a particular circumstance. One person thought this, the other person thought that. And mm-hmm. in the absence of a good, clear policy, we've got this he said, she said type of situation. I guess even with a policy that's poorly written, that could eventuate as well. So is that a common thing with that lack of clarity? Is that, you know, is that a source of conflict when we don't have the clarity coming out?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it comes down to just communication, you know, whether we're talking about a policy or, you know, and how we've communicated it or the way it's written. And is it, when I talk about fit for purpose, I mean, is it bespoke to your particular practice? You know, does it say go to this person if this or this position if, you know, if this should arise or this is what to do and this is the process to follow or you've got a grievance if it explains all those things. So, yeah, it just definitely comes down to communication and clarity. And you absolutely can pause. You absolutely can go have a look. What do we need to do here? Let's make sure confidentiality is paramount. And if you look at another example of a policy, perhaps just a leave policy, a little bit more innocent, a little bit more free-flowing. Mm-hmm. Leave policy could be your annual leave, your time off in lieu, your personal leave, grievance leave. And if you don't have that clarity around or just general what we call personal leave, which is the same bucket that your sick leave comes out of, say someone's sick and they don't know what to do because, once again, for me, it's the rules of the game. If they don't know what they're supposed to do, if they've got to ring in sick or not, or do I give 2 hours notice or don't I? Or is a text okay if I just text the practice manager that I'm not coming in? And that's when people can have, disparity in what they think. Someone's not communicating, I'm getting frustrated, and that really can snowball into a grievance. But out of something so silly where someone is legitimately not well enough to come to work, but they've not followed a protocol because they didn't know about it or it wasn't made clear. Yeah, definitely clarity is key.
Oh, we've spoken a lot about the obligations of the practice owner, which is obviously really important. But I want to just also talk about the rights of the practice owner as well, because I'm listening to the personal leave conversation there and I'm aware I've had lots of practice owners come to me over the years with the belief that personal leave is being abused somehow and that it's become, instead of 4 weeks rec leave and 2 weeks personal leave, it's kind of become 6 weeks rec leave. From a business owner or practice owner's point of view, how do you maintain that balance of doing the right thing for your people, but also, I don't know how to phrase this any nicer, but not have them take the piss?
First of all, we need to realise that there's that reverse onus of proof. Now, it's a horrible term that so many people tell me, but ultimately they expect the employer, the business owner, the practice owner, the leaders that represent that employer to have the tools, as I said before, the tools, the equipment, the money, the resources to actually know what they can do and what they can't do, right? Employees, just I thought you were going to ask this before, the employees actually have an obligation. They have a duty of care to do the right thing, to follow the policies. If they've been shown and educated and trained, then they need to do the right thing as well. So they also have their own obligation. But I feel like although the reverse onus of proof is back on the employer with regards to anything, even if someone whether we talked about the working Australian working rights, you know, it used to be in the hands of the employee needed to prove that they could be there legitimately and work in Australia and show the right records. But now it's up to the employer to ask for them, to document them, to keep them on file, et cetera, and to fully understand them, right? And so I just think one little phrase jumps to mind to answer your question is that the employer or the leader can be firm but fair. I think if you are those things, then you can set the boundaries. You start as you mean to go on. in that sense is you're setting yourself up to succeed and your practice to succeed and each individual individually to succeed, but also collectively. And so you can say these are the boundaries. And the analogy I love using is like you're playing a game of football. You need to know where the boundaries are, where we're all headed, like where the goalposts are. Mm. Also then if you step out of the boundaries, what's going to happen? So if you breach confidentiality or you do something that's outside of, you know, one of the policies or you don't follow your own policy for both sides, then, you know, we'll bring you back in. We'll have a little chat. This is the process we're going to follow in regards to, say, a performance management policy. But then you need to know that if you step way out that boundary and it's on purpose or repeatedly, what the employer can do and what we call reasonable management action. An employer, a leader has the right to be firm but fair and follow their own processes and policies and pull people up respectfully. And there's a way of doing that. It's no longer is there this still, you know, you do one thing and wrong and then out you go. Mm. You know, you're fired straight away. That's very much, you know, the US still. But I feel like it's a point where you need to understand what you can and can't do, unless it's obviously serious misconduct.
Yeah. I think it's really important to kind of address the culture piece as well. How do we create that really productive culture in the practice? All this is going to sound very, well, it is compliance oriented and we need to do it. We understand, as you said earlier, it's the boring part, but it's not boring when it goes wrong, right? And then it's a bit too exciting. So I wanted to ask you, how do we create that culture? How do we make sure that we are creating the environment for people to succeed where all of these policies, though they're in place, they're not, hopefully not going to be needed.
Yeah, and you're dead right. That comes down to that culture word, you know, and that doesn't happen overnight. But whether you're starting your practice or whether you're expanding or whether you're an existing one doing really well, you get every day is an opportunity just to stay connected with your people. And for me, it's two things. If each individual can feel like they're adding value and feel like they are valued in that, you know, reward, recognition, just a pure thanks. You know, it starts with the power of small, just the little conversations, the little acknowledgements that someone's doing a good job, that they're helping each other out, they're forming a team. That's their own culture. It doesn't have to be just, you know, from the highest leader or owner in the business. It's about everyone coming together. And so if you just make everything a conversation, I'm a big believer in building that culture through having just one-on-one conversations regularly as opposed to having, you know, one full-blown reactive once a year performance review when everyone has that recency effect where they're just trying to remember what did I achieve in the last however many, you know, months and people only remember the last couple of months or weeks, you know, you're lucky, both the employee and the employer, you know, if you can remember past that, what have you been your milestones, what have you added here? And so once again, it just comes down to those little conversations. And if you're hiring the right people, you know, right from the beginning and not rushing into it in that reactive side of thing, if they are aligned to your purpose and where you're going with your practice, who are you serving, then their performance, you know, will naturally show that they want to be there, that they're putting in discretionary effort. And when that happens and it's happening for each individual in respective roles in a practice, then the profit, you know, is there. It definitely shows on the books. And then you can collectively make a positive impact in the communities in which you live. You can start to give back. You can start to enjoy a little bit more what you do. And we call that the five Ps. You know, if you need to remember it, it's people, purpose, performance, profit, and positive impact. And it just starts with a conversation and having the right people on board to run beside you.
Just wanted to go back to something you spoke about a little while ago in the conversation, because I think this is an area that most people don't understand. I certainly didn't understand it, and I've had to kind of go through and learn more about it. And that's on the subject of record keeping and our obligations around that. Can you just have a bit of a chat about what our obligations are there? Because most people, if they're anything like me, might be just a little bit blissfully unaware of what sort of notes we need to keep, how often we need to keep them, how we store them, all those sorts of things. What sort of record keeping would you suggest as best practice?
Yeah, look, when I start to write all these things off, it might seem a bit overwhelming. But once again, if you just start small and start by, you know, making sure you've got the right documents, you know, that fit your practice, then you can start to build on them. So the fundamental ones are your employment contracts. making sure that they actually have the right awards that are listed, as we talked about earlier, they've got the right pay points. This comes into your, are you paying people correctly? You need to keep those records. You need to keep issue copies of pay slips and have those records on file, as well as issuing them to your employees. The policies we've spoken about, you need to have them on record. You need to show that they're version controlled. When were they created? Mm-hmm. When were they signed off by the particular employee? And which version they've signed off, and you can't just go and change things. Oh, no, we do this way now. Now I'm going to performance manage you because you haven't followed it. It's also position descriptions you need to keep on file. And that's never just a task list. That's always about showing what is the scope of someone's role and what are they there to achieve and, you know, to serve for the particular, company or practice or customers. An easier way to keep all of this documentation is through a HRIS, a human resource information system. So there's plenty out there. It makes it really easy. You can filter in, you can actually start to do recruitment through there if you're looking for, you know, some next superstars to bring onto your team. The same system can help you with that and keep that documentation, because you need to also keep any kind of interview notes. Most people think, oh, well, that person wasn't great. I'm not going to bother even replying to them. I'm not going to keep their resume on file. But you actually need to. I'll slip in a little thing here around, I guess, an area where people can come unstuck, not too frequently, but even someone who is not an employee yet, they are maybe a prospective employee, a candidate as such, can actually make a claim to say that they were discriminated against, or felt that they weren't given the job because of what we call a protected attribute, which because, oh, well, I thought I was in the running, but you found out I'm a mum to six kids and you think I'm not going to be able to do the job, or because of my religion or the sex, those sorts of things. So once again, that's essential record keeping that you need to keep on file as your interview notes, even if it's dot points. I'm really big on keeping this stuff and being compliant. I'm also really big on, let's make it simple, date, times, dot points, whether it's a disciplinary discussion, you need to keep records on that as well. Any kind of performance conversations, as I said, anything to do with your payroll, a lot of the time that's a given and kept quite well in, you know, systems like Xero and things like that. But all of these other things, whether we're talking the contracts, the policies, the position descriptions, can be kept, you know, on a computer folder if you don't have a human resource information system, or yet, because I strongly recommend if you're going to scale and grow, is to get a system that can really make it quite seamless. But you can keep it just in a document, you know, in a folder in a SharePoint file, but make sure it's password protected because that is confidential information, or what we call personally identifiable information, and not even to touch on the world we live in now with, you know, identity theft and all those sorts of scams. It's more around they're your Fair Work record keeping obligations.
Cool. There's a bunch of stuff there. So the HR information system sounds like a bit of a piece of kit that I think everyone's going to want, basically, particularly those practices that grow and scale, because, again, managing this, staying compliant, you want to make it easy, you want to make it seamless, you want to make sure you're not having version 2, 3, 4, 5, the wrong person signing the wrong thing, et cetera, et cetera. So really, really important. Sally, we have spoken a lot about compliance today, and obviously there's a lot of things that people are probably feeling a bit overwhelmed about now. And, you know, I know whenever I talk to you, I'm always scribbling notes about, you know, some things I could check up on or do better and so on. One of the things that I think is really useful is to kind of have a bit of an audit around these things and just kind of go, where am I going okay? Where are the gaps? What do I need to kind of, you know, do to close those gaps? And I know you guys do an HR health check, which I think is a really valuable service. If anyone's listening to this and thinking, well, goodness me, I just want to find out where my red lights are, where my green lights are, how do people reach out and, you know, book out some time to have an HR health check with you?
Yeah, good question. Look, it really doesn't need to be a tedious conversation. It can be an email to us at sally@purpleplayground.com.au, or you can jump on our website. We do have a mini health check on there. But it won't really dig as deep as you need. It might give you some indication, so feel free to jump on. It's just a few quick questions on there. But the one we do when we you book in a time, you can jump onto the website and click on my Calendly link and book in a chat with me. We can jump on a Zoom or a phone call, whatever works. And then we go through a bit of a quick but deep dive into your practice just to say, what do you have? And a lot of people, and this is why I try and steer away just from the website, HR Health Check, because people will say, yes, I've got that. And as we talked about before, yes, I know I pay my people right. Because the intent is, yes, I wanted to, and I think I do. So what we do in our conversation is really unpack, okay, so tell me a little bit about, you know, what pay grade they're on, or what level, or how long they've been doing these sorts of roles. And we can sort of find out if there's any gaps. You may not, but wouldn't you rather just know if you do have a gap in your record keeping or your Fair Work obligations or anything to do with your people, policies, contracts, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
I think it's just better off knowing than not knowing. And at the end of that conversation, we give you a report to take away to show that what your priority areas might be, in our opinion. And then you're free to go and, you know, chip away at those things for yourself, or we can help, or you can find another expert that might be able to point you in the right direction.
HR issues to me are a bit like tax. The surprises are never usually good. And so I would really rather make sure I know what's coming down the pipeline so I can proactively and preemptively deal with it so that I don't get that surprise. I want to make sure we do all the right stuff. So Sally, lots of really good advice there. And just on a personal note, I want to say thank you to you for helping me with all my HR and recruitment stuff as well. It's made the world a difference. So from me to you, I appreciate you very much indeed.
Pleasure.
Sally, we might pull up stumps there, but thanks so much for taking the time to come and hang with us today. As always, it's good fun to talk. I'm sure we'll be talking again very soon, but thanks for sharing all your insights and expertise on the show today, and look forward to catching up soon.
All right. Thanks for having me, Jesse. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.